Good morning, it's Debbie. On Wednesday, May 4th, 2016, a reading from the Herald and Review E edition. Starting out with local and front pictures of ducks and people working in a kitchen, A Duck Dynasty at Children's Museum by Justin Kahn, Herald and Review staff writer. Decatur Mayor Julie Moore Wolfe admitted when she helped organize the first Children's Museum of Illinois Duck Derby in 1992, she was just winging it. The Duck Derby and the bad duck puns that go along with it have become a Decatur tradition. Saturday's event is the 25th year for the Duck Derby, which raises money to help fund the museum. Moore Wolfe was a WAND anchor and community volunteer in 1992, when the Children's Museum campaign chair for fundraising, Jackie Getter, approached Wolf and Sally Finney about creating a fundraiser for the museum. She'd heard about these duck races, and we went and checked out one in Champaign, but we had no idea what we were going to do, how we were going to do it, where we were going to do it, or how. Moore Wolf said, there's a lot of educating people about what it was. They thought they were buying real ducks. We had to explain, no, they're rubber. It was announced to the public in Herald and Review in June 1992, and the bad puns began. Here's some ducking news, the lead read. The Children's Museum had opened in 1990 in the basement of Rock Springs Nature Center and was still there in 1992 when the Duck Derby began. Moore Wolfe said they weren't exactly sure where to have it, but it settled on Dreamland Lake at Fairview Park. The first Duck Derby was August 22, 1992. The weather was perfect, Moore Wolfe said. We had a giant pickup truck, and we just dropped them in the lake. The prize for winning the first Duck Derby was a trip to Disney World, won by Steve Ruck. In the early years, the winners usually received egg sighting prizes, trips, cars, watches, jewelry, TV, VCRs, and swing sets. As the years went by, the prizes changed to cash so people could take a quack at the big bucks. This year, the grand prize is $3,500, with second place $1,000 and third $500. After moving to Nelson Park Marina in 1994, the Duck Derby finally found a permanent home in 1996 at the new Children's Museum in the current location at Scoville Park. That was the same year Duck Derby mascot Quacker Jack, Q-U-A-C-K-E-R, Quacker Jack, debuted. There were years when the weather was foul, F-O-W-L, like in 1996, but the event is held rain or shine. Every year the museum has managed to raise between $10,000 and $20,000. The goal this year is $18,000. Since the move to Scoville Park 20 years ago, not much has changed about the Duck Derby. Thousands of rubber duckies are loaded into a grain wagon. The fire department fills it with water, and then it's dumped into the parking lot with tarps and sandbags, creating the path for the race. There's still a carnival atmosphere. It's still $5 a duck, and then the proceeds go to the Children's Museum. The money helps us make improvements to our exhibits and educational programs, Children's Museum Executive Director Kate Fleming said. It helps keep everything fresh and new. Admission to the Children's Museum is always free on the day of the Duck Derby, and the turnout has grown in recent years from around 200 a decade ago to 600 flocking to the event in recent years. This year, for the 25th anniversary, there'll be a DJ playing music and a kids race with themed ducks available to purchase, along with inflatables, carnival games, and face painting. It'll be that fun, festive atmosphere people are used to, Fleming said. Ducks will be available to purchase, 5 each, 6 for 25, 11 for 50, or 22 for 100, up until the 11 a.m. race time. Fleming said she didn't know of any fundraisers that had been around as long as the Duck Derby, and Moore Wolfe agreed. If you make it 20-plus years and people are still excited about your event, you're doing something right, Moore Wolfe said. It's an event that doesn't cost a lot to participate in. It's fun, and unlike a lot of fundraisers at black tie events, you can bring your kids, and everyone loves the Children's Museum. In the words of late H&R community news editor Bob Falstrom, what'll they think of next? Waddle, as in waddle, waddle, waddle. What'll they think of next? End of the article. If you want to go, The Duck Derby, Saturday, 9 to 1 p.m. Race is at 11. It's at the Children's Museum, Illinois, on Country Club Road in Decatur. Parking is available at Scoville Zoo. Of note, ducks are available for purchase up to 11 a.m., 5 per duck, 6 for 25, 11 for 50, or 22 for 100. And you can buy right up to 11 o'clock. First prize, $3,500. Second is $1,000. And third is $500. Continuing into politics in the election, Trump virtually clinches Republican presidential nomination. This is by Julie Pace and Scott Bauer for AP. Indianapolis, in a stunning triumph for a political outsider, Donald Trump all but clinched the Republican presidential nomination Tuesday with a resounding victory in Indiana that knocked rival Ted Cruz out of the race and cleared Trump's path to a likely November face-off with Democratic frontrunner Hillary Clinton. Trump still needs about 200 delegates to formally secure the nomination, but Cruz's decision to end his campaign removed the last major obstacle. Ted Cruz, I don't know if he likes me or he doesn't like me, but he's one hell of a competitor, Trump said of his last fierce competitor, whom he had dubbed Lion Ted, L-Y-I-N, Lying Ted. Trump, in a victory speech that was much lower key than usual, promised victory in November, vowing anew to put America first. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders eked out a victory over Clinton in Indiana, but the outcome will not slow the former Secretary of State's march to the Democratic nomination. Heading into Tuesday's voting, Clinton had 92% of the delegates she needs. I know that the Clinton campaign thinks this campaign... This campaign is over. They're wrong, Sanders said defiantly in an interview Tuesday night. But Clinton already had turned her attention to the general election. She and Trump now plunge into a six-month battle for the presidency, with the future of America's immigration laws, healthcare system, and military posture around the world at stake. While Clinton heads into the general election with significant advantages with minority voters and women, Democrats have vowed to not underestimate Trump as his Republican rivals did for too long. For months, Republican leaders considered him a fringe candidate and banked on voters shifting toward more traditional contenders once the primary contest began. But Trump proved to be a surprisingly durable, tapping into Republicans' deep anger with party leaders and outlasting more than a dozen experienced political rivals. Republican National Committee Chairman Reince Priebus declared the race over, saying on Twitter that Trump would be the party's presumptive nominee. "We will all need to unite and focus on defeating Hillary Clinton," he wrote. Indeed, Trump's first challenge will be uniting a Republican Party that has been roiled by his candidacy. While some GOP leaders have warmed to the real estate mogul, others have promised to never vote for him and see him as a threat to their party's very existence. Even before the Indiana results were finalized, some conservative leaders were planning a Wednesday meeting to assess the viability of launching a third-party candidacy to compete with him in the fall. One outside group trying to stop Trump suggested it would shift its attention to helping Republicans in other races. Rory Cooper, a senior advisor to the Never Trump Super PAC, said that the group will help protect Republican incumbents and down-ballot candidates by distinguishing their value and principles from that of Trump and protecting them from a wave election. Indiana was viewed as the last gasp for Cruz, the fiery Texas conservative. He campaigned aggressively in the state, securing the support of Indiana's governor and announcing businesswoman Carly Fiorina as his running mate, but lost momentum in the closing days. Cruz had clung to the hope that he could keep Trump from reaching the 1,237 delegates needed for the nomination and push the race to a rare contested convention. I've said I would continue on as long as there was a viable path to victory. Tonight, I'm sorry to say, it appears a path has been foreclosed, Cruz told a somber crowd in Indianapolis. Ohio Governor John Kasich is now the only other Republican left in the race, but Kasich has won just one primary, his home state, and trails Trump by nearly 900 delegates. Kasich pledged to stay in the race, with his campaign manager saying the governor would continue to offer the voters a clear choice for our country. Only about half of Indiana's Republican primary voters said they were excited or optimistic about any of their remaining candidates becoming president, according to exit polls. Still, most said they probably would support whoever won for the GOP. Clinton, too, needs to win over Sanders' enthusiastic supporters. The Vermont senator has cultivated a deeply loyal following, in particular among young people. A group of Democrats count on the general election. Though Sanders claimed momentum, he has conceded his strategy hinges on persuading superdelegates to back him over the former Secretary of State. Superdelegates are Democrat Party insiders who can support the candidate of their choice, regardless of how their states vote, and they favor Clinton by a nearly 18-1 margin. Exit polls show about 7 in 10 Indiana Democrats said they'd be excited or at least optimistic about either a Clinton or Sanders presidency. Most said they would support either in November. The exit polls were conducted by Edison Research for the AP and television networks. With Sanders' narrow victory Tuesday, he picked up at least 42 of Indiana's 83 delegates. Clinton now has 2201 delegates to Sanders' 1,399. That includes pledged delegates from primaries and caucuses, as well as superdelegates. Trump now has at least 1,041. Cruz exits the race with 565, while Kasich has 152. End of that article. In state and regional, officials consider consolidating emergency communications. This is by Royan Broyles, H&R staff writer. Decatur, Central Illinois law enforcement officials have begun to investigate sharing an emergency communication center. While details remain scant, the proposed idea would include the construction of a 15,000-square-foot state-of-the-art communication center in Macon County. The center would provide 24/7 professional dispatching services to all law enforcement, fire, and emergency medical services within the region. A proposed $67,000 study to investigate the potential of a regional center has been discussed and approved by the Macon County Finance and Justice Committees. It is expected to pass at the May 12 meeting of the full board. The study, to be paid for by a donation from the Howard G. Buffett Foundation, would investigate the total cost of the project and potential cost savings if municipalities were to consolidate their centers, Macon County Sheriff Thomas Snyder said. Our whole view on this comes down to we know down the road there'll be limited funds coming down the road to counties from state and local means for 9/11 services, Snyder said. We have to do more with less, and we want to look at what our options are. The sheriff's office has been in contact with the SAFR Group, a Boston-based professional consulting firm to conduct the study. Once started, the study is expected to be done within 2 months, Snyder said. Informal meetings and discussions with representatives from Shelby, Christian, Moultrie, DeWitt, and Fayette counties have been conducted, and Macon County Sheriff's Lieutenant Jonathan Butt said those representatives have all expressed interest in at least conducting the study. Officials from other counties in the region said it simply makes sense to at least explore the option of a shared communication center. It'd be remiss of me not to look into it, Christian County Sheriff Bruce Kettlecamp said. If we can save the taxpayers money, then this is win-win. But we need to see the numbers and whether it'll save money before we move forward. Christian County currently has 8 full-time dispatchers who cover all the smaller departments outside of Taylorville and Pena. If they were to move to a larger state-of-the-art center, Kettlecamp said, it would improve communications between agencies. In addition, a move could potentially allow his office to talk back and forth with an Illinois state police, as they currently cannot afford to use the radio communications network used by the state police. We're having serious problems funding our 9/11 on the way it is because the state is not making the payments to us, Kettlecamp said. The idea of a consolidated call center is not new to DeWitt County, which a few years ago brought the call centers for the city of Clinton and Farmer City, as well as the county and the 9/11 board under one roof. The move was a mixture of cost-saving and streamlining communication between the agencies. I think that's probably among the agencies, said Chief Deputy Mike Walker, with budget issues similar to other small counties and uncertain future of Clinton Power Station, Walker said there are reasons to consider all options. One potential issue representatives have acknowledged is one that often comes with talks of consolidation, job losses. More information on the number of jobs held at the potential new center should be made available upon completion of the study. Walker said he'd heard of anxiety over the potential consolidation of the local call center and the future of its 10 full-time employees, but he reiterated that no agencies have agreed to anything more than a study. It'd be foolish to say that we want to do this without seeing the numbers, Miller said. At this point, we really don't know how this will shake out, who will be part of it, or whether it will even come to fruition. End of that article. And the last article on the front page of the Herald and Review for May 4th is Local One, Millikan MBA Students Study Efficiencies at Caterpillar. This is by Teresa Churchill, a senior staff writer at the Herald and Review. Decatur, standing with crutches because of a fractured tibia, Ben Quigg still managed to walk right into one while talking about how his team analyzed Caterpillar Incorporated use of bolts, washers, and other parts. "That took us a few weeks to get our legs underneath us," he said. The laughter that erupted in the Caterpillar conference, however, was the congenial kind. That's because Quigg and 10 other students in an inaugural MBA class at Millikan University have been working at Decatur plant for the last 7 weeks on projects to make company processes more efficient. After the three student teams finished their progress reports, another examining the handling of the waste materials, and the third a production of lower powertrains for motor graders, quality manager Adam Mees could not thank them enough. "You can tell by the level of interest and questions in the room that you guys hit the ball out of the park," he said. "Awesome job." Their teacher is John Yotter, a master's black belt at the Decatur plant, who had long taught the principles of Lean Six Sigma, a collaborative effort to improve performance. Their presentations Tuesday morning were part of the final segment of a three-unit course in project management that would equip them to sit in for an examination to become certified green belts in Lean Six Sigma. "This is a quintessential win-win-win," Yotter said. "The students get some real-life work experience, CAT gets a pipeline of potential employees, and the community should benefit as well, especially in terms of landfill waste." Students working on that are Sydney Boyd, Erica Nawakachu, and Dane Patterson, all of Decatur, and Trent Trudeau of Oriana. So far, the team is focused on cans, plastic bottles, and paper, and also on wood used in packaging many of the parts the plant receives. Part of the challenge is getting employees to do the right thing when disposing waste, and another is sheer volume of pallets Caterpillar gets. Holding his hands a couple of feet apart, Bruce Daniel, who works in supply chain planning, said, "A 20-foot-long piece has to be on a 20-foot pallet, and you can't have a pallet just that wide." Pedersen said the team hopes to finalize a project in the next week or two and accepted two suggestions, one from classmate Jade Becker of Cerro Gordo, who said a competition among employee groups might help, and Yotter, who asked the group check out www.funtheory.com. Students presented on the motor grader lower powertrain production were Becker, Wes Bullig of Bluffs, Megan Leary of Bloomington, and Tori Pollard of Decatur. Quality manager Blake Fleming said the group is on the right track but needs to gather more data and consider expanding the scope of their study. "Don't be afraid to say, hey, wait a minute, somebody owes me some parts," he said. When Pollard expressed concern about stepping on toes, Fleming replied, "We do want you to do that." Quigg, Amber Kaler, and Taylor Morthland represented the most eye-opening information of all when they demonstrated that Caterpillar maintains an inventory of 6,500 parts from its Illinois Logistics Center in Champaign, when a preferred list of 400 parts might not only suffice, but save the company a significant amount of money. When he realized how much 18-cent washers stack up against costing half as much and how accurate the team's information was, all Miz could do was exclaim, "Holy crap," under his breath. Team members frequently credited the engineers they worked with, including manufacturing project engineer Brandon Brenner and logistics engineer Juan Rodriguez, illustrating another way the students benefit by developing a network of contacts inside the plant. Tony Liberatore, director of Millikan's MBA program, said the university's new fast-track series of classes is geared toward recent college graduates and other younger students who want to earn a Master of Business Administration in a year. He said that other instructors include former CEOs and CFOs for the full C-suite, that's a capital C-suite, S-U-I-T-E, C-suite experience, and that current students will wrap up their Caterpillar projects in 3 weeks and graduate in August. We wanted to reach the younger population and give them a slingshot into the market, Liberatore said. I think it's a smashing success. End of that article. On to local. Volunteer effort lights up GM Square. Ameren's Kono, C-O-N-O, volunteers light up GM Square. This is by Allison Petty, a staff writer for Herald and Review. Decatur, Pat McDaniel couldn't resist. Tongue in cheek, how many Ameren people does it take to change a light bulb? This Decatur city councilman quipped, getting a laugh from the Ameren, Illinois volunteers who were preparing to do just that. They joined volunteers at the Coalition of Neighborhood Organizations, I guess that's Kono, to change 100 porch lights in the GM Square neighborhood Tuesday evening, an effort aimed at dual goals of crime prevention and energy efficiency. The volunteers covered about 9 blocks on Church, Union, and College Streets. The new LED bulbs donated by Ameren could last longer than 20 years, said Paula Heinkel, Community Relations Coordinator for Ameren. The effort was based on a similar event that was successful in Missouri. The energy-efficient bulbs have become much more affordable in recent years, she said. For folks who are saying, I don't know if I want to spend $25 on a light bulb, they're not at all, Heinkel said. Ameren has actually partnered with a bunch of retailers, so if you go to Walmart or you go to Rural King, you can find some of the light bulbs for just over $2. The GM Square neighborhood was chosen in collaboration with Kono and the Decatur Police Department, she said. Ameren could potentially extend the effort into other Decatur neighborhoods in the future. Kono President Sue Lawson said residents were very excited to learn about the opportunity. You'd be surprised how much you can see with a porch light on. It does help. It makes people think that somebody's home, whether they are or not, Lawson said. The volunteers were joined by Decatur Police Officer George Kessner, who distributed information about Crime Stoppers to adults and police badge stickers to children. Good lighting on the front and back of the residence can be crucial in preventing burglars, he said. You know, the bad guys like to hide in the shadows, Kessner said. The more lighting you have, the better a deterrent. Resident Tammy McDowell said she doesn't keep her porch light on often, so it usually doesn't occur to her to change it. Really, really neat, she said of the gesture, and I appreciate it because that's the one bulb I always forget to replace. End of that article. The next article, Lullaby Concert Serenades Packed Offices, is the headline. Baby Talk Events, Key Players Planning Retirements This Year. Key players put their last official lullaby concert to bed. This is by Teresa Churchill again, senior writer with H&R. Decatur. It's not every day that Michael Luxner, conductor for the Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra for the past 20 years, gets second guest. Here it was happening at his final lullaby concert for Baby Talk Tuesday evening after the University String Arts Ensemble finished playing Mozart's Einklein Nachtmusik, which is translated a little night music. Charlie Decker, a senior from Pena playing double bass, barely heard it over the din from dozens of children in the audience, but pointed his bow at Jordan Lilienthal after Decatur Boy piped up and said he knew what the song was really called. I love balloons, I love balloons, the four-year-old shouted in reference to the birthday balloon song from Little Einsteins, which borrows Mozart's famous melody. Wearing the same striped pajamas he bought for the first lullaby concert in 1988, Luxner was the picture of grace as he spoke with the children and conducted pieces that included children's favorites like Itsy Bitsy Spider and Twinkle Twinkle Little Star. I haven't worn pajamas since I was 9, he confided before the event began. I'll be retiring these after tonight. Luxner begins his own retirement after the spring semester, and Claudia Quigg, who welcomed 275 people to Tuesday's concert in the Decatur Public Library, is retiring as Baby Talk's executive director at the end of the year. Quigg said after a child pulled the fire alarm at Westminster Presbyterian Church last year, not once but twice, while an Ash Wednesday service was underway upstairs, the lullaby concert had nowhere to go but up. This year's special guest was Macon County Sheriff's Lieutenant Elgin Hawthorne, who read the traditional bedtime story, Goodnight Moon, by Margaret Wise Brown, while holding his 3-month-old granddaughter, Nariah Harris. The baby's twin sister, Aria was safely tucked away with her mom, Brianna Hawthorne, in the audience. Lauren Foster, 4, seemed to be enjoying herself performing the hand gestures to the wheels on the bus and bobbing her head just as enthusiastically to the beat of a classical composition. Her mother, Keturah Foster, also brought her 4-month-old son, Champion Wilder, and said Tuesday was the first lullaby concert. Gives parents and young kids something to do together, Foster said. We'll be back. That's the end of that article. Concluding this session with briefs, Cat moves jobs. Caterpillar Inc. plans to consolidate its mining and technology division in Tucson, Arizona, and will result in loss of jobs in Decatur. Employees will relocate to Tucson from a variety of Caterpillar locations, including, but not limited to, Peoria and Decatur and South Milwaukee, Wisconsin, all locations where we have mining employees, and company spokeswoman Rachel Potts said. Arizona Governor Doug Ducey announced the move Tuesday and said the new facility will add 500 jobs to the state's economy over 5 years. The new offices will house employees in executive management, engineering, product development, and support positions. Potts said the announcement won't affect manufacturing operations in Decatur, which will continue to make mining trucks and wheel tractor scrapers. Pershing Water Repairs. A water main failure led to lane closures for emergency repair work that started Tuesday in the 1,000 block of West Pershing Road. The eastbound lanes in that area will be reduced in one lane, and the left turning onto Pershing Court will be closed until about 3 o'clock next Tuesday, the 10th. Lincoln Trail Action Day. A restoration action day at Lincoln Trail Homestead State Park and Memorial will be at 9 a.m. noon Saturday, May 7th. Judy Parrish, president of the Friends of Lincoln Trail Homestead, said the work will focus on scraping and painting picnic tables and restrooms. Decatur, Low Vision Fair. Free demonstrations of assistive technology and services for people with limited vision will be made from 1:30 to 3:30 next Tuesday, the 10th, at the Decatur Macon County Senior Center on North 22nd. For more information, contact Rich Adams at the Visual Services there at the Senior Center. Decatur, CPR Anytime Kits. The American Heart Association and members of its volunteer Macon County Mission Advancement Committee will be handing out free CPR Anytime to Macon County businesses from 9 to 2 Thursday, May 5th at the Chamber Business Expo in the Decatur Civic Center. CPR Anywhere Kit train employees on CPR techniques with a skills practice DVD, a CPR mannequin, and a skills reference card. The kits for the kits business can stop by the American Heart Association. Decatur is the last of these updates. Diabetes Living Class. St. Mary's Hospital is offering a class called Living Healthy with Diabetes from 11:15 to 1 p.m. Thursday, May 12th, the week from tomorrow, in the Assisi Room at St. Mary's. The program will consist of three parts: create your plate, meal preparation made easier, and get your body moving. The event is limited to the first 50 participants and reservations are required. Lunch will be served at 11:15. For more information or to reserve a seat, call St. Mary's Food and Nutrition Services at 464-2541. 464-2541. And this concludes part one of the Wednesday, May 4th, 2016 Decatur Herald and Review. This morning, as I started out, I heard it's, of course, Star Wars Day. May the 4th be with you. Talk to you again soon.